Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, welcome to the Autocar Podcast, my week in cars with Pryor here, Cropley over there. Hello, Stephen.
Hello, mate. How's it going?
Good, thank you. We are going to talk over the next half an hour or thereabouts our respective Autocar columns and much more besides, including your trips around the new year.
Yeah.
Which are still ongoing. We've been to a lot of places very soon, haven't we? It's picked up very
quickly. Yeah, I mean, we met, didn't we, at, well, we had a go at recording this in yesterday at the Bicester Scramble and failed miserably and had to do it again.
Too busy, mate. Too nosy, too busy, too much going on.
Yeah,
too much going
indeed.
On. A letter from Arshad Mahmood says, actually, there's a good letter in the mag the other day, letter of the week from Bill Geisen, who says that as well as EVs arriving, as they've come with new-look interior interfaces that he struggles to get on with. It's quite an interesting letter about the difference between a traditional car, as you and I know it, and you know how far away some of the new EVs are pitched compared to them. Anyway, Bill says he's not going to have one. But Arshad writes to say, I am a not-so-young 67-year-old and have been retired for nearly 5 years. I have a Porsche Boxster 981S, but I replaced my Audi Q7 3-litre diesel when I retired with a BMW 330e because the golf course is 3 miles away from home and the Audi engine wasn't even getting warm. So now most of the golf mileage is on a battery. Then, a couple of months ago, we replaced my wife's Ford Focus runaround with a 4-year-old Nissan Leaf. And as I take that to the gym Monday to Friday, sounds like quite a nice life now, doesn't it?
Yeah, he's living the life, isn't he?
Pretty, pretty well sorted. I was getting fed up with having to scrape ice off of the screen in the winter and get into the cold car for the gym run first thing in the morning. Now it's warm, ice gone by 6:30 in the morning. So horses for coursing, I guess. Nothing wrong with new tech. Can't argue with that, can you?
No, I can't argue with it. I think that's the right attitude too. Mm. You know, there's nothing wrong with the old tech, but it works for him. I find it interesting. All this new graphics and new switchgear, and I love it. Every time, it's a bit of an adventure. I mean, I hate getting lost in it. Mm. Sometimes if you get led up the blind alleys, but we've had this conversation, haven't we?
We have.
But normally, you know, there's a... it's an exciting new display. I like it.
Mm. So tell me, the year started January 1st.
Yeah, off to
Brooklands. Cars, off to Brooklands.
Yeah, I've often done it. Mm. And you find, you know, other folks like Richard Bremner, John Simister, those sorts of mad classic car enthusiasts.
Mm.
They were there, both of them, and a bunch of other blokes besides. 1,200 cars. I think it was their biggest ever entry.
1,200 classics.
1,200 classics.
That's good, isn't it? And, so, and there are more people, presumably, besides who
bought. Yeah, 5,000 people.
Oh, wow.
In fact, I went in the big Ford American Ute, in fact, Australian South African Ute.
Yeah.
And there were as many people parked in the adjacent, industrial estate car park as there were parked up the hill. So I believe the attendance was 5,000 plus.
It's pretty good.
Really good.
Yeah.
Quite a reasonable day. It didn't rain until the afternoon when we were all more or less departing. It's one of those, arrive reasonably early, wander around, look at everything, talk to your mates, go home.
Mm.
No pressure. Lovely.
And a museum's open There's a classic car meet, but the museum, the Brooklyn
Museum.
Yeah,
the Brooklyn Museum is open, yeah. And all the eats and restaurants and so on.
Yeah.
And, of course, next door is Mercedes-Benz World, and I went over there in the afternoon, invited by the bloke who runs things, a guy called Ed Redfern, son of a very good friend of ours.
Yeah.
And he runs this four-car stunt driving team called Silver Arrows, which, and there are these four C-43s that go around at rather prodigious speed at least for the surfaces available.
Yeah.
And I sat in with Ed, and we did this routine with these cars about 5 feet apart. It was amazing.
And they go pretty quick to then pretty sideways, don't they?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, there's a skid pan. There's a very, you can hardly stand up on it. There's one of those very slippery skid pans. The outer ring is a bit less slippery, but still slippery.
Right.
That is at the end of a proper handling track, as you and I would understand it, where they get to deploy their 500 plus. And there are clouds of tire smoke all over the place. It was really good. I've had a go around it myself, not, with any distinction, but it's good fun there. And the thing that always strikes me is that here is a place where you can do 100 miles an hour inside the M25.
Yeah, it's not very common, that sort of place, is it? And they seem to be able to run all day, every day. It's quite enough, far enough away from houses that it doesn't annoy too many people.
No, they've been doing it a long time, so I guess the neighbours are used to it, and there is space around.
Yeah.
So,
I always think that, it is the world's oldest purpose-built race circuit, and if you happen to move in there after it was built, well, it's your lookout, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Any time after 1909, you've got to expect it then.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then, we both went to Cafe in a Machine, where we recorded last week's podcast.
Yep.
But yesterday, have you been anywhere else between then and yesterday, which was the first Bicester Heritage Scramble of the year?
No, just the four, really. Yeah. The Bicester Heritage
Just Scramble. The four in the first week of the year. I mean, that's remarkable, isn't it?
Well, it is compared with the way life used to be, I think, yeah. Where people would say, we don't do anything until after Easter.
Hmm.
But now there's so many lovers of cars and so many pretty serviceable cars anyway, that they can go out at all times of the year. I mean, you've still got to watch out for the salt, don't you, if you've got a Ford Capri, say.
Yeah.
But if you hose it off, you're fine.
I saw an Audi 200 estate yesterday in silver, looking just fantastic up at the Bicester Scramble. And I don't know when the last time I saw an Audi 200 estate was. C plate, so what would that be,
1986?
Six or something like that? Yeah, but, look, totally clean. And that is approaching 40, isn't it, that car?
Yeah.
I think if you went back 20 years, 30 years, and then took a 40-year-old car then, they would not be in such a good state.
No.
They would not have stood up for the test of time.
They're the ones that have disappeared, aren't they?
Yeah.
We wonder where they all are. We were having a chat about Renault Fuego the other day, which is really interesting. It would make such an interesting car now, wouldn't it? But they're gone.
Yeah. My uncle had one. I remember it.
Did he?
Weirdly fondly. Yeah. I remember going on a big family holiday, my uncle and aunt coming too, and being in the Fuego, driving around somewhere in the West Country, possibly Cornwall, Devon, Cornwall. Madness is I like driving in my car, and Uncle Rog every time at the end of the chorus doing that totally inappropriate, but I remember that distinctly a long time ago. Where are the Fuegos?
Yeah,
they are just,
and the Renault 14s and the Renault 12s and cars like that. I mean, I don't mean to pick on Renault. It was the same for Vauxhall, and it was the same for VW for that matter.
Yeah,
not really, actually, come to think of it, when you look at all the Beetles that are around.
Well, they do. But there were a lot of them made, weren't they? Because they do rot a bit. I mean, mine is slowly disintegrating in a dry shed.
Is it?
Porsche 917, one had a magnesium chassis, I think. And that's a problem because magnesium corrodes in even the driest of atmospheres.
Does it?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's a
Didn't
thing.
Know that.
It's an issue. So at one point, this 917, I think, can't be driven. But at some point, it will just collapse under its own weight.
Oh, right. Okay.
At some point in the future. Gosh. And I think there's nothing you can
There'll
do.
There'll be about a loud report while you're lying in bed.
I think, anyway. I think that's true. I may have misremembered.
I think your Audi 200 was made of aluminium, wasn't it?
Oh, I don't know.
I think they discovered aluminium construction early on.
Oh, interesting.
Around about the time of the Audi 100.
Yeah.
And so I've got a feeling that it would be very good.
There was a brochure open in the boot that you could look through the tailgate. Split tailgate, that's not what I mean. Two pieces of tailgate glass divided by a spoiler.
Okay.
In a way that is very common today and is good for aerodynamics. Also had a rear wash wiper in a way that you wouldn't find. Oh. Anyway, you look through the back, there was a brochure open and there was a picture inside of an Audi 80 of that era with BBS alloys. I've got to say, mate, I don't want to bang on about old cars and how great they are, but oh my goodness, it just looked
beautiful styling. Incidentally, that I can never hear the mention of a rear wash wipe without thinking of my mates in the used car trade who used to refer to that as a B-day.
Okay. How many people at a Sunday Scramble? 7,000, 5,000, 7,000?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. It didn't seem to be quite as busy as the sort of bumper events in the summer.
Hmm.
But it was very... There were plenty to see, wasn't there? And there were... You seem to run into half of the readership of autocars. It's great fun.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. Enjoy them. There was a Car of the Year exhibition as well, wasn't there? There's a feature in Classic and Sports Car this month. Cover story, in fact, written by Simon Hucknall, because it's the 60th anniversary of Car of the Year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In which you and I both feature.
Yeah, as ex-jurors. What was the... Talk me through the premise.
I think the plan was to get, a great car from each of the decades that we're talking about, right up to the modern era.
Yeah.
And for us as jurors, Ray Hutton was another one.
Mm.
Ray Hutton was with the jury a very long time indeed. You know, he was the president and all the rest of it. He was a, real mover and shaker. And we were all supposed to drive, along with Simon Hucknall, we were all supposed to drive these cars and make a judgment about the ones we liked, I guess. It was that straightforward.
Yeah.
And the debate has always been over whether or not the Car of the Year jury has made a good decision. I mean, inevitably it happens every year, but it looked at... from rather a further away, it is interesting to look at some of these cars. Some of them are rather unadventurous. The Lancia, for instance, to me is a version of a Fiat, after all.
The Delta.
Yeah, good car, looks nice, but it isn't a Lancia, really. It's a Fiat.
Mm.
But on the other hand, there's an NSU Row 80 there, and I was well, I think you were too, well taken with the Peugeot 405, which is such a beautiful, nicely set up car.
How Simon picked the, did he pick himself, he chose himself one car from each decade, did he, that was, that
I think it might have been
notable and interesting.
Might have been a matter, a little bit of expedience, what was available, but.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay.
But he.
But a 405.
Oh, no, he put a lot of work into it.
Massive amount. But a 405, I thought, yes, I drove the one that we had there. So that was Car of the Year in 1991?
Yeah, something like that, mate.
Anyway.
There was an Audi 100, I
thought it was really good. Everything a family saloon should be in that. I thought it was great.
Nice size still.
Yeah.
And pretty good interior, durable car. Mm. You could see... You could still see all the things we praised it for, like the supple ride and the sort of ease of use, the utility of the thing. It was a good car.
Yeah.
And but the winner was
1986.
Yeah.
Ford Focus.
Yeah.
Mark One Ford Focus. Brilliant. What a superb car it was, and when you drive it now, still is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just spot on.
It was interesting for me because I perceived even more than I did at the time, I think, what a leap forward it was.
Mm.
I had an amazing experience with the Ford Focus. I went to the Geneva show remember the last thing they did was to announce the name.
Yes.
And we're at this dinner, and I'm sitting next to Jack Nasser, the boss of Ford.
Yeah.
And he's about to get on the stage and announce to the world what this car was called. And nobody, not even the Fordies, knew what it was called.
Mm.
So as he's about to get on the stage, I said to him, Jack, I want to be the first person in the world to know what it's called. Can you tell me? And he looked at me and he said, I don't think I can do that, Steve. And then he conversed for a little bit longer. Then he went up and announced the name. And he came back, sat down, and he said, did you get it? And I said, what do you mean? He said, I used the word focus about 20 times in all the things I said to you. But I said, no, mate.
No, mate, I'm sorry.
Too stupid.
Tell me about... No, we'll talk about a new Ford in a minute. In the lineup, there was the Jaguar I-Pace, which won 5 years ago or thereabouts.
Yeah.
That finished in the most nail-biting finish there has ever been to Car of the Year.
You were still a juror, weren't you?
I was a juror then, yeah. And it finished equal on points with the Alpine A110.
And they're a pair of really interesting choices, aren't they?
Because yeah, they are, yeah. And Car of the Year doesn't pick... One, it doesn't pick expensive cars very often, but it certainly doesn't pick sports cars very often. So to find something like the A110 finishing level on points... And in the end, they did a count back to see how many jurors had placed one or the other first in their rankings, and they picked the I-Pace that way. We picked. But I think, if I remember rightly, you can't buy an A110 in Ireland, or... Somehow the Irish juror didn't quite make it onto the list of having been on the launch or getting one. I think maybe they weren't. Maybe you can't buy one in Ireland. So he hadn't had a go in one. And had he awarded it a single point,
he would have won.
It would have tipped the balance. It would have tipped the balance.
Amazing. That would have been extraordinary too, because
wouldn't it?
The only time a car like that has ever won in 60 years is the Porsche 928.
Mm.
And everything else has been a rather, you know, sort of... a bit of a school runner, you know.
Yeah. Well, the two big criteria, aren't they? The idea is it's the car that does its job the best, but with particular emphasis on technical innovation and value for money.
Yeah.
And in a lot of markets, value for money, they think, means cheap.
Yes.
Don't they? So that there have been a lot of rather unglamorous cars have won it over the years.
But the Leaf one, didn't it?
That Leaf one, good. Yeah. And yeah. I like, you know, there are things, our editor, Mark Tishaw, is now the Autocar representative on the jury. Autocar is a sponsoring publication. And I do like the fact that it takes no money from nobody. You know, there isn't a fancy awards dinner with, you know, tables.
Sponsorship from Uniroyal or something.
There isn't, yeah. They don't sell the logo thereafter. You know, it is purely funded by the publications that...
Yeah.
Put it together.
I think that's still the answer for all award ceremonies. You know, but I lose patience with journalism awards too, where you get the gong if you can be bothered to enter your nonsense. Well, you know, surely somebody should look at the whole field and decide who is actually the best.
Exactly. Yeah, I agree, mate. I'm not a big fan of award ceremonies, and I say that as somebody who has never won one.
But also a person who is extremely reluctant to put on the dickie and go...
I've got this line that I still want to use in a column at some point, or in copy at some point, which is that bow ties are for Pomeranians and dinners you don't want to go to. And that's it. And at some point, I'll find a way to get that into something.
Well, I think it's already on the ether already.
It's in there now. Tell me about a new Ford. You've been driving a Ford Cougar.
Yeah, well, I just thought I should have a go in a few Fords because my grandfather was a Ford dealer. I've sort of got Fords in the blood, even though you know obviously in this racket you try and maintain ruthless
impartiality. Yes, yeah.
But anyway, I thought I should have a few goes, drive a few Fords, and along came this Cougar, which is a perfectly innocuous looking car. It's one of those crossovers that's. Could be a Hyundai or could be a Toyota or, you know, but it perfectly nice. But the very well equipped, I thought nicely made. I liked all the graphics and stuff that I get off on. It was relatively roomy. But the problem was the ride. And, you know, I am used to, well, you and I are between us. We're probably responsible for a good few thousand words about our wonderful Ford ride quality is, especially, you know, and how good they are at absorbing bumps and yet maintaining body control and all those things. And this car didn't do that. It crashed into the bumps and it was rather fidgety and horrible. And the steering committee, who admittedly has become pretty good judge of ride now, because she, you know, I'm always banging on about it. And
she spent a lot of time in a lot of cars, more than most dynamics engineers, you would think.
I think so, yeah. Great variety.
Yeah.
And she was horrified. And I just found myself thinking, this car is on the wrong suspension. Somebody's bolted the suspension from a wheelbarrow underneath this car. And I just couldn't believe they could be quite so bad. It was clearly a car that hadn't been tested in the UK. You know how everybody, you know, back in the days of Parry Jones, they used to say, a car that will ride well in the UK will ride well everywhere. Well, this car clearly hadn't been tested in our country. And the interesting thing is that since that, I've also had a go in a Renault Austral, which we've also criticised for, you know, a similar sort of car that we've also criticised for rather poor ride.
Yeah.
But I think the Cougar was worse than the Austral.
See, that,
which I've makes
not,
it bad.
Not driven a Cougar for a very long time. I've not driven the latest one at all.
Yeah.
And I thought an Austral was, yeah, I was a bit
honest
about the ride quality. And and so to find it's worse than that is a shocker, really. For a company like Ford, as you say, because if you're in the middle market of car manufacturers, you've got to, in my mind, offer something that nobody else offers, because there are companies making money off of being value brands, companies making lots of money off of being premium brands, but then there's this whole mass market in the middle where it's difficult to sell cars to people unless you give people a very good reason to buy yours over somebody else's.
Yeah.
And I wonder what Ford's is.
Yeah. Well, they just had that positioning for all the years in the UK seen as a British company, weren't they? And even though they gave up making cars here several decades ago.
Yeah.
I guess it was the first, I believe, one of the very first cars to be mass manufactured in this country. You know, first country when it made Model Ts after America.
Mm.
So we all got used to Ford being the local product and the default, a bit like Vauxhall, you know, dog and cat, Ford versus Vauxhall.
Yeah.
But now it hasn't got that sort of, it's not that automatic choice anymore. And they need to find a reason to be, I think.
Mm.
These cars were nice, but I would notice it every day. You know, in the between, you know, your house here and Bicester Heritage, 2 miles away, I would notice
it.
You'd notice it.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve and I will take a short break. We'll be back with better Fords in a minute.
Yeah,
and,
good.
Join us in just a few moments' time.
What car would you buy if you could buy any car? What car would you buy if you knew you could save thousands? What car would you buy if you could compare the latest offers from approved dealers? What car would you buy if you could do all of this in one place in just a few simple clicks? And where would you go to buy that car? What car? Car buying made easy. Visit whatcar.com to buy your next new car.
Welcome back to My Week in Cars. Let's do a quick letter first, shall we, Steve, before we talk more Fords. Paul Mason writes to say he's taken delivery of a Renault Megane E-Tech, which is found to be an excellent family car for daily life in Cornwall. Since taking delivery just before Christmas, I've travelled to Suffolk twice, which has meant charging on the electric highway. I have not had range anxiety, but have been frustrated by the speed of the chargers, often not charging at anywhere near the advertised rate, and paying 79 pence per kilowatt.
Mm.
When at home, I can charge at 9p per kilowatt overnight, 36p during the day. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah,
overnight,
he's on a really good deal, but where I am in Gloucestershire, it's 38p day and night.
Cool. I drive a Skoda Kodiaq 1.5 petrol DSG at work, says Paul, which is a good car, but after the Megane, it seems noisy and the auto box frustrates. And this is the bit I wanted to talk about in Paul's letter. You do notice that, don't you? When you get out of an EV I can't remember what I was driving. I got back into a petrol car with an auto gearbox. And I suddenly thought, wow, this feels harsh. And it's not at all, really. Yeah. But
there's just all this stuff going on suddenly.
Yeah.
But the thing I always bang on about, you know, which is part of what you're talking about, is the beautiful clean departure. You know, you just if the car has been well set up, you tow it and you get exactly what you ask for instantly. Yeah. And so the precision of your departure is just breathtaking compared with many cars, even, you know, and particularly expensive ones with big engines, which can be quite sluggish off the mark.
Yeah. Especially because I think they used to be better, but with start-stop systems and very slow or carefully managed throttle introductions to keep the emissions clean. So they don't want to lose any unburnt fuel, do they? So they're very, very, you know, the fueling system is very carefully metered out.
Yeah.
I think actually that maybe it used to be the case that a very smooth auto was smoother than an auto today without very careful management.
I can believe that. Yeah. I think it must frustrate car engineers to hear people, us likes of us, bleating about slow departures, because they know how much calibration and careful engineering has gone into it.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, before we talk the other Ford, should we do my column a bit?
Because it's
on this theme.
Yeah.
So James Atwood, the mag editor, you can find the magazine, by the way, at themagazineshop.com. Print subscription, digital subscription, full access to the 129-year archive. Couple of gaps here and there, aren't there? But not very big. Not very big. There's a couple of issues missing.
We're about to heal them over, aren't we?
Heal them over with, I think, the assistance of the British Library, which, of course, has all of the issues in place. So, yeah, they're all being digitised. Anyway, that's all available. James Atwood drove an Audi Q8 e-tron Dakar special edition late last year, I think.
Right.
Came with 8 wheels.
Amazing.
Because they give you a set of off-road rubber with it as well. And I thought, actually, the idea of an EV with a motor in each wheel would have a completely flat underside, because it's just all battery. You just armour the underside quite easily. The lack of a drive shaft, if you had one of those, you did a feature on, didn't you? There's people who make an electric motor or are developing an electric motor, which is very thin.
Yes.
And it's kind of looks disky rather than long.
Very much so, yeah.
So you could have one of those in each wheel. So you don't need drive shafts, which would limit your axle movement. You don't have differentials hanging underneath the car. You don't have an exhaust hanging underneath the car.
No.
So completely flat underside on the car, loads of suspension articulation, a motor in each corner, giving exactly the amount of power at exactly...
And braking
at exactly the moment you want, because the response of an electric motor is so fast and so easy to, relatively easy compared to a mechanical system, to meter out. I mean, what a 4x4 you could have. What an off-roader you could make.
Indeed. Yeah, I agree. I think it's a whole new area, isn't it? We want to see that.
Yeah.
There were, you know, just a year or two ago, people got all twisted up about the fact that you were going to have to dip all the electrical bits in the water and so on, but that's long gone.
I mean, unlimited weight depth.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go.
I did once pitch the idea. It didn't get... It didn't get very far up the chain. As a manufacturer announced some time ago, it was a prototype EV. I won't name them and embarrass them, but they said, here it is. It's a prototype electric version of one of our very good off-roaders. And of course, it's all completely water sealed, so it doesn't have the wade depth issues that our normal off-roader have had. I said, tell you what, I've got a great idea. Why don't you let me drive it underneath a river from one side to the other, completely underwater? I'll wear scuba gear. Great feature that'll be. They went away. I said, well, we'll chat to some engineers and see whether that sounds feasible or nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You've seen enough cars abandoned in floodwater over the last week. I mean, an EV doesn't have to have those problems.
No.
It ingests no air.
No. Probably worried about you, mate, drowning.
Well, probably. Yeah, that's probably the thing. Or just in case something isn't quite totally sealed and I'm on a metal box.
The insurance with claim from your missus.
Anyway, let's talk an off-roader that does have... Oh, yeah, so anyway, my point was, it felt that we're on the cusp of something exciting.
Oh, I think you're right. Absolutely true.
But let's talk an off-roader that does have a terrific wade depth, because you and I have both spent time of late in the Baki, the Ute, the Ford Ranger Raptor.
Yeah, well, you've got an excuse. I mean, this is your long-termer. You're going to write... wise stuff about it and talk about running it and making excuses for 22 miles per gallon or whatever it is.
Yeah, about that. I don't know why they didn't give it to you, mate, because if you're in the market anyway,
the thing is, I already have this Audi, which is, you know, to which I should be doing justice. Mm. But I shamelessly borrowed it for the week after Christmas, just because, I don't know, I just had to have a go in one.
Yeah.
And they very kindly indulged me, even though I was nasty about their Cougar.
Well, that's all right, mate, you know, yin and yang, as they say.
But I just think it's terrific. I think there's so much to like about it, so many surprises. It's very quiet, cruises quietly. Yeah. The tyres are amazingly quiet. There were some surfaces where I reckon it's quieter than several of the bigger luxury saloons, just the road noise I'm talking. Pretty good steering.
Yeah.
I love the view. I love the it's surprising feeling rigidity, I think. I mean, and loads of stuff like, you know, radar, cruise controls and, you know, configure the lights that look down the road and half turn themselves off so as not to dazzle the bloke.
Yeah, they do work pretty well, actually, don't they? I've found that in the past. Yeah, not all manufacturers get that right, but these systems are pretty good. Yeah.
And it can be a bit of a challenge parking it, but I think if you attack the problem with the right mindset, it's okay.
Yeah. There is one co-op locally I will barely go to unless the car park is half empty, because it does have, it's very old, has very small spaces. But I feel a bit of a burk in it sometimes, but I am enjoying it. I think it's a very good...
Well, of course, you had the orange, really I had a restrained grey.
Well, that does improve things a bit, I think, yeah. And it was developed in Australia, wasn't it, primarily, where it has even more power from the 3.5 EcoBoost V6 than we're allowed in the UK.
Yeah, I think in Australia, I believe... It comes with 400.
Yeah, because they don't have a petrol particulate filter, I don't think.
Okay.
And I spoke to a Australian motoring journalist about them. I said, you know, if space is the premium, isn't it? Really, that's what you want. You want habitat, frankly. You know, any animal wants habitat to thrive in. I said, could you go? This guy called Scott Newman. I said, could you go, Scotty, somewhere where you could just drive it, you know, flat out on loose terrain? He said, mate, you could empty the tank of fuel and see not another person.
Yeah.
And the right place. And it's, I love the car, but I do feel that I don't quite live in the right place.
No, I suppose part of my, the appeal to me is nostalgia, you know, just because as a kid, I can remember being, you know, bunged in the back of a Holden Ute on top of a load of rubbish to go to the dump. And it was the kind of, weekend ritual, but there was somebody in our neighborhood was always borrowing a ute from his mate to go, and he would always load up the kids as well. And that, I just remember carefree days in utes, I suppose. Yeah.
In terms of its capabilities versus a luxury 4x4/SUV, would you have one over? Well, I've read your columns. Would you have one over something that you would consider a somebody would consider a luxury brand? Would you have a Ford Ranger?
I would. I absolutely would. I have nailed my colours to the mast. I said that if I could have the change, I would much rather have one of these than a Range Rover.
Yeah.
Or I would prefer one to a Range Rover. I'm not saying it wouldn't be wonderful to have a Range Rover, but but if you said, you know, you can have a Ranger and $60,000. Instead of a Range Rover, I would take the Ford any day.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Actually, I think the new Range Rover works best still for me at its lower price end, which I know is expensive these days. But the ones that are super luxe, super long, with the you know, twin aircraft cabin chairs in the back, I don't think they work quite as well as the slightly more honest, lower spec'd.
I agree.
I think that was true of the previous gen, and I think it's true of this
I think that, well. But that doesn't that theory run through right through the jewelry, watch, fashion industry? You know, there are cars that justify their natural price, and there are cars with there are top end models created for people who just need to pay more. You know, remember the old story about I think it was a bloke with a Bentley in China who wanted to buy the concept car off the Chinese show stand, and his man approached the company reps and said, "Mr. So-and-so would love to buy this car, but he's got a problem with it. He's worried about the price." And what they needed was the upshot was they took it away and created another 200,000 quid's worth of value in the car in order to make him pay it so he could pay a million for it.
There are people who always buy the most expensive version. You've got to cater.
I think it's less quite often. If you go through a Bentley or a Porsche options list and tick everything, you'd probably finish up with a bit of a strange car.
I reckon you would.
And, you know, the ones that have just got tickled a bit with a few options, they're the ones.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I reckon that brings us to the end of this week's My Week in Cars. What are your movements over the next week or two, Steve? Are you away?
No. Now then, I've got to go to France in a week or two to find out about the new the Renault E-Tech transmission. I don't know if you heard about this, but they've got quite an interesting hybrid transmission.
Oh, is this the Lego fella we talked about a few weeks ago?
Yeah. This gentleman, I'm going to meet him and I'm going to see the piece of Lego.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I look forward to that very much.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
But Steve and I will be back this time next week. In the meantime, you can find... you know what? There's a first drive coming on Thursday night. The embargoes agreement means I can't even tell you what it is.
Ah.
It's proper top secret. Proper top secret.
Oh, well, that sounds good.
Yeah, no, it's really good. There is a Mercedes CLE drive from me in the mag this week, which is online now. I've got a column coming this week. There's other stuff.
I've got a bit to write off an interview with Rawdon Glover, the managing director of Jaguar.
Oh, I look forward to that.
Yeah, it'll be.
Yeah, really look forward to that.
He didn't say too much, but you know, he did his best.
Yeah. And Matt Saunders has written an Aston Martin DB12 versus Ferrari Roma versus Maserati Gran Turismo feature in the mag this week.
Sounds good.
Yeah, really good. Yeah.
Another year begins, mate.
It does. It doesn't stop, does it?
No, it doesn't stop.
So Steve and I will be back. Yes, same time, same place this time next week. Thank you, mate.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.